Till now, we have seen that the measurement of the frequency of a pulse train coming from a suitable transducer was possible by counting the number of the pulses within a prefixed and known interval of time called delta t. Now, the perspective is the opposite. We could say that is the reverse. And external events and time events exchange the roles with respect to the previously described approach. In this case, the external events will limit, will define the period during which the count is made of time pulses produced by a clock with a period tck. We will not describe several approaches like in the previous technique, so we will not see software-software, hardware-interrupt, hardware-hardware, and all the possible combinations related to the way through which pulses and time clocks period are detected by the microprocessor. More conveniently, we will see only one approach that feature the acquisition of the pulses coming from the sensor through an interrupt sent to the microprocessor, while during a couple of interrupts related to such a kind of pulses, a clock provides several pulses, several periods TCK that are suitably counted, and the inverse of this value will be an approximated measurement of the frequency of the pulses, of the external pulses, and multiplied by the granularity of the transducer, an approximated measurement of the velocity. So, we can say that the time is represented by an n-bit counter. The counter works in free-running mode, receiving clocks with period TCK. The pulses, instead, are sent to the input pins of a microprocessor, maybe, for example, the input pins of a port of a microprocessor, or eventually to the main interrupt line. In both cases, we make the hypothesis that the electronic circuits of the pins in the microprocessor are edge sensitive. During the software interrupt service, the time is acquired and the velocity is evaluated as the inverse of the number of the pulses that in the meanwhile have arrived. Referring to slide 67, we can see a very elementary fragment of code that represents the instructions, the steps performed by the interrupt service routine. We remember that as shown in the picture, a timer is charged with the count of the pulses, while the signals coming from the transducer are connected to one of the input pins of the port of the microprocessor. So the first interrupt limits the end of the previous measurement interval and at the same time the beginning of the next one. Under the interrupt service routine, the first thing that is performed is the context saving and the disabling of other interrupts. And then the value of the counter is acquired saved in the temporary variable temp, and the frequency, as you can see, is evaluated as the inverse of the difference between the present and the previous values of the counter. After this evaluation, the variable pretch, that represents the content of the previous acquisition of the counter, will be set to the value acquired at now, the value contained in the temporary variable. And finally, we will exit from the interrupt routine, restoring the context and enabling again the interrupts. As in the past, even such a procedure must respect some constraints relative to the maximum and the minimum frequencies that can really be evaluated through such an approach. First of all, since the lowest quantity of time that we have in this technique is the clock period, TCK, it is clear that the fastest phenomenon that we can evaluate corresponds to the inverse of such a period. In other words, the fastest phenomenon that we can estimate is the one that between two consecutive pulses coming from the sensor finds one, at least one, clocks of generated by the oscillator. Otherwise, no possible measurement is possible. So we have to say that fmax, the maximum frequency, must be always lower than 1 on TCK. The second property is related to the fact that the slowest phenomenon that we can measure is instead the one that fills, let's say, completely the counter. In other words, the slowest phenomenon is the one so as the distance between the present pulse from the transducer and the next one corresponds to the maximum number of counts that the timer can allow, that is 2 power n, if n are the bits of the counter itself, time the clock periods, yes. The constraint on the basis of this consideration is that 2 power n time TCK must be greater than 1 divided by the minimum frequency that can be acquired. An important consideration is related to the frequency with which the measurement is provided, the so-called measurement production frequency, that sometimes was also identified as the sampling frequency of such a set of techniques. It is clear that the measurement is available when the second pulse from the transducer has arrived, or generally speaking, if after the nth acquisition of a pulse from the sensor, the n plus 1, the successive one, has also been acquired. This means that the production frequency of the measurement follows the rate with which the pulses arrive, or in other words, follows the rate of the phenomenon under measurement. This is a consideration that highlights a couple of trade-offs. On one side, we can say that this approach, this technique, is real-time, because if the hardware and the software routines are enough fast, we can say that the measurement is in time, is contemporaneous with the events that we want to measure, to estimate. On the other hand, it is necessary to observe that the rate with which this measurement will be provided is slow when the phenomenon is slow and will be fast when the phenomenon is quite fast itself. The problem is not when the phenomenon is fast, the problem could be when the phenomenon is slow. But we will see how to solve also this problem. About the errors by which such a technique could be affected, similar considerations as in the past can be repeated that are related to the presence of a latency on the interrupt management in the port of the microprocessor, and the quantization error that affects the measurement of the time as sum of the clock periods. First of all, as we have already noticed, when an interrupt arrives to the port of a microprocessor, the detection of the interrupt is immediate, but the software routine corresponding to such a kind of interrupt will not start immediately, depending on the priority that has been assigned to such a kind of software routine. In other words, depending on the scheduling policy of the CPU in the microprocessor, the service could be immediate on the flight, let's say, or delayed when other more important activities have been processed by the CPU. This is a non-deterministic effect, as we well know, and we estimate the maximum negative, let's say, effect of such a phenomenon in the worst case by introducing the concept of the maximum latency, that is the maximum possible delay due to the fact that the present activity will be executed after all the other ones present in the ready queue of the CPU have been processed. The other source of error is related to the fact that the clock sequence, the clock periods are completely uncorrelated with respect to the arrival of the pulses from the sensor. And this means that when the interrupt is detected by the electronic circuits of the port, we could be in the middle of a clock period, so as the count of relative to that clock period maybe has been assigned to the previous interval of the measurement, but part of this clock period would belong to the new interval of measurement that starts when an interrupt is detected. Unfortunately, the counter increments its own value on the edge of the clock periods, and this, let's say, partially assignment in part to one interval and in part to another interval is not possible. This is the quantization effect, and clearly will correspond to one minus clock period error, in the sense that the interval of measurement into which the clock is assigned, is included, will be overestimated, and the interval of measurement into which that clock does not appear will be underestimated. On the basis of these considerations, the measured frequency is expressed by the recipe that is shown in slide 67 that corresponds to a fork to a range with a upper limit and a lower limit. These limits are including the errors by which the measurement is affected due to the quantization TCK and due to the latency TL max that we have previously mentioned. In particular, if you consider the lower limit, it is clear that this limit is given by the frequency under measurement divided by 1 plus the number of contributes that is given by the product of the frequency itself times the clock plus the frequency multiplied by the latency. The product frequency by the latency corresponds to the number of counts that wouldn't be present but are included into the counting of the counter itself due to the latency with which the routine that serves the interrupt will start. And until the routine doesn't read the content of the counter, the counting goes on and all the correspondent values are included in the content of the counter itself. Same considerations can be done about the product FTCK. In this case, FTCK more or less corresponds to the contribute in terms of accounting that is given by the error due to the quantization on the clock period that can arrive not correspondingly, as we said before, to the edge of the pulse that arrives from the sensor. And in this way, we add this source of error to the value of 1 at the denominator of the ratio, so including all those counts that are considered by the counter are added by the counter to the value presented to the microprocessor due to these problems. It is clear that the lower limit will consider that contribute with the positive sign, while instead the upper limit in the right of the formula will include that contribute with the opposite sign, so diminishing the denominator of the ratio. Again, we can say that the frequency that we propose with such a formula will correspond a range of frequencies that we will be represented by that value that sweeps from the lower limit up to the upper limit. We can also define the absolute errors in terms of the lower absolute error and the upper absolute error, and consider that the relative components will be obtained by those ones by dividing by F. The worst case in the considering such a technique is not when we have the slowest phenomenon, as we said before, but when we consider very fast sequences of pulses coming from the sensors. In other words, the limit, the critical point for such a kind of technique is when we consider the maximum frequency we want to measure, because it is clear that the distance between a pulse coming from the sensor and the next pulse, in other words, the time distance between two consecutive interrupts, is very short in such a case, and the number of clock periods that we are considering could be low, so the accuracy could suffer, let's say, could be not enough. If we are able to respect the specifics that have been given to us in condition of maximum frequency, clearly we will able also to satisfy those constraints even when the frequency that we have to measure will diminish. Looking at the expressions of the absolute errors, we have a confirmation of such a kind of consideration, because when the frequency of the pulses is close or gets close to TCK plus TL I max, that is very short time, high frequency for the rate of the pulses coming from the sensor, the relative error lower limit will become close to 50%, so very high. Instead, the upper limit in the absolute error will become infinite, that is, in practice, not acceptable. As before, we can ask to ourselves what we can do to diminish the error, that is, to restrict the width, the amplitude of the uncertainty into the measurement of the frequency that is proposed. The first idea could be to diminish the clock, that is, the value of the period of the clock signal, of the oscillator we use to measure the time between two pulses. Clearly, the formula that we have determined show as the error will be lower, will be reduced. But of course, in such a case, we will count more clock periods, and we will need a counter with more bits, so we will, let's say, in some sense, block the output bits of the port of the micro, and we have to implement some electronic circuits, digital solutions, I mean, to avoid to exhaust all the output bits of the microprocessor itself. Clearly, we can also think to reduce the latency with which the interrupt is served. This show in a very evident way that the error will be considerably reduced. The only drawback is that to reduce the latency, it is necessary to assign more priority to the interrupt routine we are using and implementing, and this will imply, of course, an increment in the latency for other kinds of interrupts. Just to summarize and to conclude this long overview, we can say that considering the measurement of the interval of time between two pulses coming from the sensor, this is the typical mode used to perform, to carry out such a kind of measurement. And the usage of harder mechanisms to activate and to stop the measurement of the timer itself, avoids to introduce uncertainties in the acquisition of the time due to, for example, techniques like polling for acquiring the value of the timer itself. A critical point about such a kind of approach is the situation into which a phenomenon is stopped. That is, if we have to measure the null frequency. Because clearly we measure the first pulse, we acquire the first pulse coming from the transducer, but we will never receive the second one. To avoid a problem at least to exit from this situation, we can define a suitable timeout period that, when expired, blocks the acquisition and automatically sets the measurement of the frequency equal to zero. As we have already observed, the rate with which the measurements can be done and can be acquired is not constant. Instead, the rate increases when the frequency augments and vice versa. In some cases, the fact that the rate follows the variation of the frequency could be considered a benefit, but of course this possibility or this need better to adapt the acquisition to the possible variation of the frequency, generally speaking, makes the acquisition and the elaboration a little more complicated than if the rate of the frequency that must be acquired is regular. Moreover, we have already said that with the slow phenomenon, the rate of acquisition is slow as well, and this could be a problem in the sense that with a slow phenomenon, we have to wait a lot for obtaining a suitable measurement relative to its own frequency. Another issue is related to the resolution relative to the calculated measurement, since it depends on the time granularity of the timer itself. That is, basically, it depends on the value of TCK. Clearly, the resolution will be maximum, that is very accurate, at minimum frequencies, that is when the phenomenon under measurement is slow. On the contrary, the resolution will become more poor when the frequency will increase once the amplitude of the clock period has been fixed. A frequency exists, a maximum frequency can be set beyond which the quantization error is not acceptable. In any case, this is a consistent difference with respect the previously considered approach, the measurement of the pulses in a prefixed interval. The quantization error, the quantization inaccuracy on the measurement is not constant. A possible compromise can be obtained by establishing the rule that when the frequency of the phenomenon under measurement augments, we don't only count the periods between two pulses, but we establish a number n of pulses that must be counted, with n dynamically variable with dependence on the frequency that must be measured. In other words, we extend the interval of the measurement considering more pulses, and clearly we will augment, let's say artificially, the number of the clock periods that will be counted, so let's say improving the accuracy and the resolution of the measurement. Generally speaking, the most critical situations are met when it is necessary to perform the measurement about a very wide range of frequencies, I mean from very low hertz or hundreds of hertz up to hundreds of megahertz. And if this range, as in the example that I have proposed, will extend towards low frequencies or very low frequencies, and at the same time a low quantization error is required together with a high sampling frequency due to the fact that we have also to read and to acquire the high part of the range, clearly this technique will be not the most suitable for such a kind of situation. This concludes this very wide overview on the techniques that we can implement onto a microprocessor to perform the measurement of the frequency of pulses that arrive from an incremental encoder. Now, I want to propose you one possible text of an exam into which these topics are considered into a real problem. This is not the only case that we can face, but it is, let's say, an example enough significant to have an idea of what kind of problems we can find. Let's read together the text. The frequency of a pulse train must be measured in the variable range of 5 kHz, 500 kHz. The measurement must be provided every delta T second, allowing a small tolerance in the periodicity due to the real availability of the CPU. Describe how the chosen technique works and choose suitable devices so as to obtain a measurement with an uncertainty range that in the worst case is between minus 0.15% and up to plus 0.1%. Verify that the constraints required by the chosen technique are satisfied. Determine the maximum and minimum frequencies really measurable with the imposed constraints, and calculate the uncertainty range in the frequency measurement if the quantization error on the delta T interval estimation is supposed to be equal to plus minus quantum. Okay. The core of the problem is to perform the right choice among those techniques that we typically can consider for such a kind of measurement. That is to count the pulses into an interval or to count the number of periods between two pulses. The numbers and the text of the problem will suggest the right choice. First of all, we see that it is not specified when the measurement can be provided, but generically it is said that the production frequency is quite variable and can, small tolerance in the periodicity, can depend on the real availability of the CPU. That is, the production frequency is allowed to have a certain degree of uncertainty due to the availability of the CPU, that is, a certain degree of latency. Together with the fact that the fork in the precision required into the measurement, minus 0.15 plus 0.1%, is not symmetric, among the techniques that we have seen, there is one that seems to fit very well. That is the so-called hardware-hardware approach when considering the measurement of the pulses within a prefixed time interval. In other words, the third one that we have described in the previous part of the lesson, in the beginning of the lesson. This means that we can go to slide number 65 and to detect if the constraints are satisfied about this technique. The first observation that we can do is related to the fact that to satisfy the constraints, we have to multiply the maximum frequency we have to measure, 500 kHz, time delta t, and we have to check if this quantity is less than 2 power n. If this is okay, the constraint is satisfied. Second, we have to check if the minimum frequency is greater than 1 on delta t. This rule, considering that the minimum frequency in our problem is quite low, 5 kHz, can determine delta t. But this would not be the right way to proceed, because we don't consider at all the value of the precision that is acquired to us, and we know that to respect the precision required, we have typically in such a kind of approach to extend the amplitude of delta t. This means that we have to consider the constraints that says that the fork ranges from minus 0.15 up to plus 0.1%, and in particular we can consider the relative error and present in the fork of the measurement, and specifically the upper term that shows that the relative error is 1 divided by the frequency multiplied by delta t. So, with a very simple calculation, we can set 0.1 equal to 1 divided by the frequency, that in this case is the minimum 1, 5 kHz, and we will obtain the right delta t. After this calculation, it is possible to check if the number of the bits that we require, let's say, to the counter, it's enough by simply multiplying delta t that has been obtained in that way, in the previously described way, by the maximum frequency itself, 500 kHz, and we will obtain a number that will show us if the number of the bits that we are considering for the possible counter we want to use is completely unreasonable or is within the typical counters that we can have onto the market, we can find onto the market. And this corresponds to say, verify that the constraints required by the chosen technique are satisfied. When this operation has been done, we have to determine the maximum and minimum frequencies really measurable with the imposed constraints. Yes, because you will see that after evaluating delta t, and after having fixed the number of the bits of the counter, clearly you will have, we will have, more margin for measuring frequencies. In other words, 1 divided by delta t will be the minimum absolutely frequency that we can measure, not with the required percentage of precision, but in any case we can detect. And at the same way, after having fixed the number of the bits, due to the binary quantization of the counter, you will see that we can measure frequencies that are a little bit higher with respect to the maximum one that we have defined, 500 kHz. But the most intriguing question that we have to answer, the most critical point, is the one relative to the uncertainty range in the frequency measurement if we change the fork of of the inaccuracy on the frequency identification, and the text says it is supposed to be plus minus quantum. In other words, the proposal of the text is that, coming back to slide 65, we have to change the error on the estimation of the interval of time. We know that for hardware technique, this inaccuracy is asymmetric and features a lower error equal to minus clock period and an upper error that is zero, basically. Okay, to say, as the text proposes, that the interval becomes symmetric, plus minus quantum, says back corresponds basically to say that the error range will be minus TCK plus TCK. That is, instead of obtaining a fork in the possible range of frequencies that can be represented by the proposed measurement, asymmetric, we will have basically the same expression that defines the lower limit and the upper limit. Looking at slide 65, we have that the lower limit is f time delta t minus tck. This multiplication is diminished by 1 and divided by delta t, lower limit. Upper limit f time delta t plus 1 divided delta t. Clearly not symmetric. Okay, if we suppose that the error becomes plus minus quantum in the upper limit, we will have f time delta t plus tck plus 1, all this multiplication divided by delta t. In other words, the interval range will become symmetric, the absolute error and the relative error lower and upper limit will become expressed by the same formula with the only difference of the sign, that is negative in the lower limit and positive in the upper limit. This means that the relative error will become expressed by the following formula: minus f time tck minus 1 divided delta t for the lower limit, plus f tck plus 1 all divided by delta t for the upper limit. We have seen a very long part into which pulses were acquired for measuring frequencies, velocities, positions. But in some cases, pulses are correspondent to synchronization signals, that is, they represent events in correspondence of which new information to them associated is considered valid. Generally speaking, it is important to highlight if it is necessary to consider significant the falling edge or the rising edge. This latch will activate the latch function into the register that represents the real input port of the microprocessor, and that will store the value present at that moment into the input of the port itself. Moreover, this edge will force the suitable transition in the bits of the status register to indicate, to highlight the situation of captured event. The situation is well represented in slide 70 in the upper part of the figure. In particular, in the left upper part, you see a general scheme with the data that arrive to the register of the input port of the microprocessor together with the signal that validate them. This signal will be connected to every command signal of every flip-flop of the register. Remember that we will have a flip-flop correspondingly to every bit of the port itself. This signal will force the acquisition of the relative bit of data in the first latch of the flip-flop, and successively at the falling edge will cause the transition of that value from the first latch to the second one, and from here to the internal data path of the port for the successive elaboration of the microprocessor itself. Conversely, synchronization pulses are often used when we need to highlight the situation of an external peripheral ready to receive. In this case, the pulse will be provided indeed by the external device, and this signal will activate the status bit in the corresponding register, the status bit with the significance external peripherals ready to receive, whilst the latch command onto the register of the output port will be provided by the successive operation of write executed by the calculator. And this operation in many cases must be done within certain prefixed time limits. The input pulse, in other words, will stimulate the production of output information, so output data. This situation is well described in the lower part of the figure 70, where we can clearly see the signal coming from the external device called strobe signal that is connected to the state register of the port that we are considering, while output data will come from the buffer register included into the port and devoted to the communication with the external world. In the right lower part of the slide 70, we see how the strobe signal will influence the bits of the status register. The architecture follows basically the same idea as before, that is, the strobe activate the command signal of the first latch of the flip-flop in the status register, so as to being captured by the latch itself, and on the falling edge will activate the second latch, so as the content of the first one is transferred to the second, and from the second will be available to the microprocessor. In such a way, the microprocessor will be stimulated to produce output information. Real execution of this will be the processing of the output instruction that will transfer the content of the accumulator to the output registers of the port and will communicate with the peripheral that has signaled its own availability to receive suitable data.